This is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. You're listening to Truth Quest with Melody. We're streamed on the internet at khen.org, and Truth Quest programs are archived at www.givemesometruth.info. And this evening, I've got Lorraine Murray and Alfred Weber. Alfred, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Great. I'm having Alfred Weber and Lorraine Murray back. They've been on our program a couple of times prior. Alfred is head of Exopolitics, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit further there, Alfred.
Yeah, well, I'm a futurist and have a number of websites, one of which is at peaceinspace.org, and that's a website that deals with space-based weapons of mass destruction and environmental warfare, and over the past several years have been doing a series of science-based radio programs with independent scientists Lorraine Murray, looking at environmental warfare as part of a depopulation program, a global depopulation program, and the most recent instance of which seems to be the BP oil spill disaster capitalism. That's what we're here to talk about tonight.
Okay, and Lorraine, would you like to give a little bit of your background again to kind of review with our audience?
I'm a geoscientist and an international expert and expert witness on depleted uranium and radiation, the impact of ionizing radiation on the environment and public health. And I've been in 50 countries, and I travel around the world educating the public, the media, elected officials, and citizens who want to know. And I love what I'm doing. I feel very grateful that this task has been assigned to me. And I've had a wonderful series of interviews that have had a very important impact that I've done with Alfred, and I want to thank him and Co-op Radio for allowing these interviews on the issue of HAARP, a space-based weapons system. And thank you, Melody, very much for having us on this evening.
And I want to thank you for being my guest. And I'll let you guys go ahead and get started, because you're the experts in the areas that you're speaking of, and I'll just kind of chime in when I think I need to.
Okay, Lorraine, why don't we start out talking about the existence of a depopulation program? Perhaps you can start about how you began to discover this.
Well, when I began doing research on the impact of ionizing radiation on the environment and on public health, it started in the year 2000. I had become a nuclear weapons lab whistleblower in 1991, but it was about science fraud and contractor fraud at the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab, and I really did not know anything about ionizing radiation, the impact on the environment and public health. So I was invited to Japan in the year 2000, and when I went to the Peace Museums and participated in the annual Hiroshima and Nagasaki Memorial ceremonies, I was very deeply moved and concerned, and I embarked on a 10-year campaign investigating ionizing radiation and how it has changed the world and the global gene pool and the DNA of this planet. And it's truly a horrific story. And I'm sorry, I forgot your question.
Well, it's just how you began to grok that there's an intentional depopulation program going.
So over the 10-year period, I just was more and more shocked and very disturbed about what I learned about the impact of nuclear bomb tests. It caused a tremendous increase in diabetes, a catastrophic increase globally. And, of course, I have family members and discovered everybody I knew had family members who suffered from radiation exposure. And that really committed my effort in a very deep way to try to warn the public about the impact of nuclear power plants and bomb tests. And of course the bomb tests are stopped now because President Kennedy was committed to saving the children of America who were dying of unnecessary cancer from fallout. And then I went to Japan in 2000 and I met a journalist in Hiroshima who had written a book about depleted uranium. He actually asked me to write the foreword to it. And it's just been an unbelievable investigation of ionizing radiation and all these projects that has taken me to every issue that exists practically. There's nothing that ionizing radiation doesn't touch in terms of politics, public health, environment, student performance, everything. And that's really, it was an adventure. It was a journey. It was perilous. It was, surprising. And because I have a geoscience background and because this, links the environment to disease, I just have learned so much doing this, and it's so rewarding to work for humanity and all living things and to be able to educate the public and empower people to do their own research. And so that's really how I got involved and why I've continued. And, of course, then I began investigating HARP. And because of your support, Alfred, and the great, fantastic series of interviews that we've done that people can listen to on Alfred's website, www.peaceinspace.org
No, it's .org.
.org. I hope that people will listen to them because they're very, very informing.
And would you like to give your website to Lorraine?
Oh, I don't have one. People can just Google my name or do a search on my name, my first name, L-E-U-R-E-N, and there's a lot of information on the website, on websites all over the Internet, as well as on YouTube and on Google Video. There may be 20 or 25 presentations that I've done that people can watch on Google Video if they just search my first name.
Alfred, would you want to give us a little information on how you got into working with Lorraine or working in this arena? Although yours is you're working in a fairly broad area, but during this first hour, we're going to specifically address this. The environmental and depopulation issue, and would you like to fill us in?
Well, sure, sure. The way that Lorraine and I started working in this area was through the Space Preservation Treaty, which is now at peaceinspace.org, and that's a treaty which bans space-based weapons of mass destruction, including HARP, which is and HARP is responsible for most of the major manufactured catastrophes that exist now, from the Haiti earthquake to the 2008 China earthquake to other human catastrophes, the Wren, as a member of the environmental committee of the Berkeley City Council, had got a resolution passed through the Berkeley City Council adopting the Space Preservation Treaty and establishing a weapons-free zone over Berkeley. And that, in turn, was then brought to Canada. And in Canada, probably a half a dozen city councils passed it. And it resulted in, I think, additional strength to the move that then kept the Bush administration from bringing ballistic anti-defense, the ABM, into U.S. missile defense into Canada. So that's where we started.
One question I have, and of course it's, you know, we had natural earthquakes and things that HAARP is being attributed to now. That existed before HAARP. How do we ended up finding out that this HAARP may be involved with some of these earth changes that, you know, are you following what I'm saying here?
Sure.
Yeah. How do you distinguish a natural earthquake from what we call a seismic attack?
Right.
In other words, HAARP is a seismic, an environmental weapon that's used to attack another target nation or population, either through weather warfare or through environmental warfare or a variety of other means, mind control warfare or actual bombardment, electromagnetic bombardment. Loren, why don't you handle that one?
Sure. Well, in 1995, HAARP was operational, and it was sort of a long journey that Alfred and I did to begin to identify the fingerprint of HAARP, or what were the telltale signs that this was a HAARP event. First of all, I have a very long career in the earth sciences, and so I have a very good knowledge of what is normal, of the periodicity of events and HAARP earthquakes and so forth. And so I sort of know intuitively that something isn't quite right. And people who don't have that background have no way of knowing or being aware of what isn't normal.
Now, is the HAARP a Tesla technology?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
it is.
And then that goes back to the turn of the last century.
Yes, it is. And the first of all, what Alfred and I sort of discovered when we began investigating various earthquakes and rogue waves that are unprecedented. These are waves that are 70 or 80 or 100 or 130 feet high. And these have never been reported before. So this is a completely new phenomenon in a time when we're actually in an ice age and we're undergoing cooling. So it's unprecedented and it's abnormal and it's physically unlikely to happen under normal natural circumstances. So something we discovered was a pattern of foreshadowing. There is a foreshadowing event or series of events that may be a day or a week or months or a couple of years before a HAARP event occurs. An example is 9/11. And on the day before 9/11, September 10th, 2001, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, announced in New York City, predicted a terrorist event in New York City. It happened the very next day on 9/11. A hurricane disaster in New Orleans. That was Hurricane Katrina several years later. And an earthquake disaster on the West Coast. So that would probably be California. And that hasn't happened yet. I think too many people were sort of catching on to HAARP, especially because of the series of interviews that Alfred and I have done. And or maybe it's not the right time yet to create this disaster. But the foreshadowing event is a very substantial part of the HAARP event. Now, there was a HAARP storm in the Black Sea in 2007, November 2007. I had a Turkish naval officer renting a room in my apartment in Berkeley, and he came and woke me up in the middle of the night, and I'd been telling him about HAARP. He said, "Loren, come into my room and watch the Turkish media coverage." He said, first of all, there has never been a storm that I know of as a naval officer in the Black Sea at this time of year. There are no storms at this time of year. And the Black Sea is insulated or it's very distant from the weather of the Atlantic Ocean. The Mediterranean is much calmer than the Atlantic Ocean, and the Black Sea is then another distance from the Mediterranean, and there are physical barriers between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean and the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. So the Black Sea is just basically kind of like a big warm bathtub that nothing much happens there. He said also, there's never been a storm in the Black Sea with this intensity, this much energy. And he said, this is not a natural storm. Now, what happened in, somebody's typing and it's interrupting the interview.
I'm not.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
And the,
it was the intensity of the storm.
Oh, the intensity of the storm, right. So so there were, oh, for a year before that storm, that the people who live on Cyprus and people living on yachts around Cyprus reported these very strange storms and fog. They don't naturally have fog around Cyprus in the Mediterranean, and there were horrific windstorms, and then they took photos also of the sky, and you could see the ionizing lines, the moisture ionizes in these energy fields of the HAARP transmissions that were coming out of clouds very high up in the atmosphere. And so at certain times of the day, right at sunset, you could actually see the HAARP transmissions, the electromagnetic transmissions, because they were causing ionization of the air and changes in the moisture. So condensation. So that was the foreshadowing. What they were doing on Cyprus is the British HAARP facility, which is on Cyprus, at Larnaca, I believe, they had been practicing the HAARP storm for a year before they actually did it in the Black Sea. So there's a foreshadowing aspect. Then there's an economic benefit. And so I wanted to figure out why they had caused an environmental catastrophe in the Black Sea, because during this storm, two big ships full of sulfur were sunk, and sulfur, when it mixes with water, forms sulfuric acid. And that had a terrible environmental impact on the Black Sea. It's a closed basin, so anything you put in there is there for a very long time, and it disturbs the whole delicate balance of nature, the biosystem there. They also sunk some oil carriers, vessels, petroleum, what are they called? Ships that carry petroleum.
Tankers.
Tankers, yeah. They sunk, and all that oil washed up on the delicate shoreline with marshes and back bays and very delicate ecology of the Ukrainian shoreline. And I finally figured out why that occurred. It's because Putin had successfully negotiated to build pipelines to Europe through Azerbaijan and through the Ukraine, and the Western oil interests, in other words, the oil companies and the bankers in the City of London and Wall Street, were very upset. It was also Bush and Cheney who were in office, and they wanted to punish Putin by ruining the Black Sea and punishing all of his neighbors as well, so that they would be angry at the Russians and at Putin and put pressure on him to stop negotiating oil and gas contracts with European countries. And that pipeline that the Ukraine agreed to allow to pass through the Ukraine was to Italy, and Putin had just secured a 20-year contract with Italy to provide all oil and gas for the next 20 years. So there's always a foreshadowing event. There is always an economic benefit behind it, or a retaliatory action. And also depopulation and land grabs are a big part of these harp events as well.
So did they really have a big die-off of a lot of the life forms in that?
It's a terrible disaster, and the water is in layers in the Black Sea, and what can happen is it can trigger an overturn of the bottom of the Black Sea, surfacing, coming up to the surface, and it's anoxic. In other words, there's no oxygen down there. So it would just make a really stinky, gooey, smelly mess in the Black Sea as well as on the shorelines of countries all around the Black Sea.
Now, but it hasn't done that yet? Is that what you're
saying? It hasn't done that yet, but the Black Sea's in a very, very bad condition environmentally, and it will be in danger for the next 70 years.
Can I ask, did they do any kind of evacuations of the people around the Black Sea?
No, they did not.
Did they do any acquiring of the lands or tying it up so that those people could not make a living or anything, so that maybe they'd be encouraged to leave that area?
Well, that would certainly be something that happened. For instance, it would do a great deal of damage to migratory birds, to fisheries, to the food source that many countries around the Black Sea depend on for fishermen and I don't know what else they catch in the Black Sea, but certainly it impacted the food supply to all of the countries around the Black Sea.
So, because what it's starting to look like is a lot of these events that have an environmental impact are now starting to look like there's a term for it, you need.
Disaster capitalism.
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
That's what it is. Disaster capitalism. And I believe the BP disaster in the Caribbean offshore from Louisiana is for a number of reasons. Number one is they could not engineer a war with Iran. Iran has key oil supplies that would really impact the global economy very negatively if they did attack Iran. Secondly, the disaster is also having a terrible negative effect, environmental disaster in the Caribbean, which is a big tourist area. But also, this is Halliburton and BP, British Petroleum, eliminating competitors, oil companies, smaller oil companies in the Caribbean. And also, it's punishing Medvedev and Putin. Medvedev, the president of Russia, went about a year or two ago, not too long before the Haiti earthquake, and he negotiated with the Castros in Cuba to drill offshore and help them develop their oil and gas resources, natural resources, around the island of Cuba. And after that, Putin went to Venezuela to negotiate oil and gas and nuclear power contracts in Venezuela. And now the Chinese and the Russians have secured many contracts in the Caribbean region with other countries, as well as Cuba and Venezuela. And basically, the Americans and the British have lost South America, except for Chile and Argentina. And what Chile and Argentina and South America represents is the desire of, well, it's the goal of the British to develop the Falklands oil and gas deposits, because then that's a stepping stone physically to Antarctica, which many countries are licking their chops now, just waiting to jump into Antarctica because it has tremendous mineral resources, not just oil and gas, but many other types of minerals. And Bechtel, using radio tomography from satellites, has done subsurface prospecting with radio waves all over the world and identified the rich tectonic mineral belts, and they are now preparing to develop and mine them. And guess what? There's a HARP facility near every single one of those major tectonic belts that the British and the U.S. want to jointly mine and develop.
Now, if anybody's been tracking some of the tectonic activity, there seems to be a huge amount of it, particularly around the Ring of Fire, correct?
Oh, there's, yes. And that's basically a natural phenomenon because of plate tectonics. And originally, all of the continents were unified down in Antarctica in one big land called Gondwana Land. But some hundreds of millions of years ago, Gondwana Land broke up, and India is part of it. It's now traveled from Antarctica straight up into the Eurasian continent and collided with the China plate, and the Himalayas are the suture belt or the tectonic zone where this collision has occurred. And it's extremely mineral rich. And just yesterday, Melody, there was a newspaper article that the U.S. has discovered trillions of dollars in natural resources, metals, and other resources minerals in Afghanistan.
Well, there seems that's kind of one of the footprints of a lot of these countries where they have a lot of warfare.
Interest. Yes.
Warfare going along. Only they kind of have a tendency to blame it on the insurgents or the warring factions among the countries. But it seems like
that we created anyway.
And then you can kind of follow it to some sort of a corporation that might have a mineral interest.
That's right. So when Alfred and I were covering the Haiti earthquake, I knew right away that it was a HAARP event, and I knew it was a land grab, and I knew it was for mineral resources, because I know that's a mineral-rich tectonic zone. And guess what? There's a HAARP facility in Puerto Rico at Arecibo.
That's one of the most active spots in the Caribbean, is that Puerto Rican area now.
That's right. Okay. That's right. So I started really researching. You know, you couldn't do this investigating without the internet. It would be impossible to go to a library and do the kind of research that we're able to do now. And that's wonderful, because anyone listening can do their own research as well and discover just as much as we did. It's just knowing what the right question is to ask in order to get the right answers from the internet. And so I started really investigating the Haiti earthquake. This is what I found out. Alfred and I did this together. I discovered the Eurasian Mining Company, a new mining company, and of course it's owned by members of the Wall Street and City of London banking establishment. And what I discovered on their website, and people should all look at the Eurasian Mining Company website, because their five biggest projects are right there on the homepage. And the number one project was Haiti. The number two project was Norway. The number three project was Northern Turkey. I'm not just talking about one or two gold mines. I'm talking about the entire tectonic belt that starts in Istanbul and ends up on the border of Iran, right across the top of Turkey. Another project was in Kazakhstan. And the fifth big project was in Southeast Asia, in the Sumatra area. Well, then I looked at a map, or I started thinking about where the HAARP facilities are, and there was a HAARP facility in Puerto Rico right next to Haiti. There's a HAARP facility in Tromsø, Norway, right next to the mining area they want to mine. The British control and own the Norwegian HAARP facility. The Russians have a HAARP facility in Newfoundland. Hold on just a minute. Mm-hmm. And can you hear me?
Yeah, we're fine.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. And there's a HAARP facility in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, and there's a HAARP facility in Australia right near Sumatra. There's a HAARP facility in Antarctica. Why would they put a HAARP facility in Antarctica? There's one in Peru. That's a huge mining district. There's one in Brazil, and they're building more.
Is there any in Africa?
I don't know. I haven't been able to figure that out yet, but Africa, because it's a very, very ancient part of Gondwana land, has minerals and lots of minerals in large amounts that other continents do not have. So Africa is the treasure box that the United States and Britain are licking their chops over. The U.S. is especially interested because NASA needs rare metals and rare minerals from Africa for their space exploration.
Okay, now, Are you claiming then that possibly a HAARP might have been involved with the British Petroleum incident?
Yes, I think that's a possibility. The other aspect of the BP disaster is that this is extremely deep-sea drilling. It's drilling into the oceanic plate, into the tectonic zone, and they are not, they don't really know what to expect in terms of the pressures, the temperatures. This is a whole new type of drilling. And BP and Halliburton have absolutely terrible health and safety records. And so they never should have been drilling there without much, much oversight by not just the American government, but in any country where they're doing deep-sea drilling projects.
Okay, now, did they do this type of deep drilling in land, on land instead of just sea before? This is
no.
No,
no.
This is totally
no.
new.
Well, completely new.
Because I thought I'd heard somewhere that they had those kind of depth of drill.
It completely different conditions, because on the continent, when you're drilling down, the continent has very, very deep roots that extend down into the mantle. So you would be drilling through continental material, and it's very different from the ocean plates that are very thin, and they're fractured and broken in these tectonic zones, submarine tectonic zones that they're drilling into. It's unprecedented drilling. They don't need to be doing it. There's no shortage of oil and gas. In fact, because of the new drilling technology called horizontal drilling, we have so much gas, we don't even have enough places to store it. In fact, gas prices are below the production costs. So it's just greed, and they're competing and driving out competitors, and they're creating this environmental disaster. Instead of a war, they'll get the contracts to clean up the mess that they made. Melody, it's really very, very alarming. It's wrecking the environment, and I'd like Alfred to say something about the legal implications and what governments can do, what should be done to bring these transnational corporations into check, because they're just they're cowboys.
Okay, let me, before you, Alfred, you get into that, I wanted a couple of questions. Wasn't there some kind of a major disaster of a drilling type in Nigeria?
The British Petroleum has made a mess in Nigeria. There's probably as much oil floating around there as there is coming out of the BP deep sea drilling project that we're dealing with now in the Caribbean. And this has happened all over the world. Every place they go, they leave a disaster, an environmental mess. They poison the water, the soil, the air, and they walk away.
Okay, so there has to be a reason that they have something to gain there. But one other thing that I wanted to point out that had come up in some research that Rosalind Peterson had done, and I'm just asking a question here, and if anybody else noticed it, and I don't know if it's significant or not, but we had last fall we were talking about the Navy making I don't know if they call it putting our east and west coast pretty much from north to south on them under the Navy control. I mean, not that it hasn't been there, but there's another terminology that, like, of a warfare type, but, or four drills, so that they had, you know, that the average public might not have access to these areas, but they didn't do that in the Caribbean and around the coast of Florida. And I just thought it was curious, and then to see these kind of events taking place after all this other. Although in the Northwest Coast, which you should be familiar with, Lorraine, about their setup on doing some kind of testing on the marine life and that sort. Are you familiar with that?
They've done a lot of tests, the Navy has, on the West Coast, and people have reported very bizarre phenomena. For instance, huge strings of marine animals, fish and the seals and sea lions all swimming parallel to the beach for miles in one direction, and then they turn around and then swim back. That's unprecedented. There's no reason. I've never seen anything like that or heard it, and I've spent a lot of time on the coast of California. So the Navy has basically taken over the West Coast and the East Coast and the offshore waters. We know already that their sonar is so strong, it's killing whales and causing pods of whales to beach and die. They're bursting the eardrums of the whales and other marine life, and the courts just keep allowing them to do it for national security. It's just, they're just completely destroying the environment, and there's no reason for it. There's no good reason for it.
Okay, Alfred, did you want to address what Lorraine was talking about on a legal aspect and that sort? Alfred? Did we lose Alfred? Oh, we did. Oh, dear.
Uh-oh.
Let me see.
Oh, he was trying to call me.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So he, okay, call, can you hook up with him again?
I will try to see if I can do that again. I've not done this before, but let's see if it, I can see if that'll happen. Uh-oh. Now right, do we have you? Okay,
yeah.
Now we got you both. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
I don't get this first time I've done that. Okay, good. We were asking the Lorraine was wanting to address you on the legal aspects of these environmental disasters that appear to be created by corporate disaster capitalism.
Well,
did you hear my question, Alfred?
Yeah, and then I dropped off.
Yeah.
I dropped off after that. I'm not sure about the legal aspects now. I don't think that we've gotten enough evidence on the table yet in this discussion as to the full possible consequences, talking about BP, the BP oil, consequences of what the potential for the oil spill may be, and all the preparations that are going on now behind the scenes for evacuation into FEMA camps that are either already constructed or being hastily put together, on land lots that are allegedly being leased by FEMA and other federal agencies. I just, was advised of a whole number of things. Number one, according to one reporter, BP is still spreading a toxic dispersant to hide the oil, which makes it sink to the bottom. And there's still a question out on the table about the hurricane season, which is coming, and what can occur there in terms of the damage to the ecology of the marine life, but also to the ecology of Florida. and the other Gulf Coast states. I just like to read something which I came across. It says these were insider sources in BP and the U.S. government saying that a gas bubble approximately 15 to 20 miles across and 10 feet plus high near the wellhead of the BP Gulf well had formed, and that it may cause a massive explosion within weeks or months. The pressure at the wellhead is 100,000 PSI, and while the gas explodes, it might be like a Mount St. Helens going off that would create a huge tsunami traveling at 400 to 600 miles per hour, sinking all vessels within miles and drive the oil and hazardous dispersant and gases inland within minutes. Florida, in fact, would get the brunt of this. And Obama is in the meantime, he just gave a speech tonight and is not really, it's as though I think he's doing a shuffle. If we take this as an environmental war attack, and we take the fact that Obama is on the BP payroll in the sense that they were his single largest contributor, and Obama has not really appointed a commander there to attack the situation, but rather has gone along with the camouflage bumbling of BP, whose game plan appears to be to profit from the alternate wells which are being dug, and so they'll have two wellheads from that, and not really to report upon hazards that may well be occurring now, like this reported bubble, and the reported possibility that up to 40 million people may have to be evacuated because of fumes and other contamination, and that this is an actual environmental war attack, not so much of geopolitics, but it's an attack of one class of people upon a larger class and upon the planet itself for purposes of depopulation. We can't really interpret this that much in terms of traditional geopolitics. So I think that the conventional legal issues don't apply here in the absence of finding an arena where one can really begin to marshal what are the true facts. Is this an act of environmental war? If so, it was probably planned with a great deal of care. Katrina may have been a preliminary run-through for this. I have actually seen a set of Illuminati cards, which were published in 1995, kind of the Illuminati best hits, and they contained one card for the 2001 9/11 event, which showed a plane hitting one of the Twin Towers in the exact position that it would do so on September 11th, or a plane hologrammed it, depending on what you think. Secondly, a second Illuminati card that described precisely the BP oil spill occurring, and precisely that the BP oil spill is occurring in the Gulf of Mexico now. And that was in 1995.
I saw those cards myself.
But
that was before the oil spill, so I didn't have that frame of reference.
Yeah.
I have something to add when you're through, Alfred. It's about the Department of Energy, the secretary that Obama appointed as Secretary of the Department of Energy and his ties to BP.
Yeah. So why don't I just pause there and say that the one government bureaucrat that Obama mentioned in his televised speech today was Dr. Chu. So let me hand that over to you.
Before you get started, Lorraine, let me just also throw in there the part about Goldman Sachs and the stock sell-off.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's part of the foreshadowing.
Right.
They know ahead of time, and there's an economic benefit and interest, and Goldman Sachs is owned by the Rothschilds, the City of London bankers. The Rothschilds are a front for other people who prefer to remain unknown. And the mortgage crisis in the United States, the mortgage crisis that happened 20 years ago in Japan, it's all the same people. It's Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns, and that's the Rothschilds or the London bankers, London financiers, and the Wall Street bankers work for them. The University of California is their main contractor for weapons of mass destruction. So it's not a surprise that Stephen Chu, who is a Nobel Prize winning chemist, I believe. He worked in alternative energy for his 30-year career at Stanford University, which is a business university, and suddenly moved to, was hired by the University of California to be the director of the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, which is the home of the Manhattan Project in World War II. But Berkeley citizens in the 70s had a successful campaign to turn the city of Berkeley into a nuclear weapons-free zone, and they were able to drive the contracts and the money. This is billions of dollars that the government paid in grants and research money to the University of California and the Lawrence Berkeley Lab to do research. Chu was chosen to be director. This is all the foreshadowing and setting up the BP disaster. And Chu was chosen to be the director of the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, which was a good fit because in the post-nuclear weapons shutdown in Berkeley, the Lawrence Berkeley Lab was turned into an alternative energy research center. And Stephen Chu, as director of the Lawrence Berkeley Lab for 4 years, received a $500 million contract from BP to do research or for the Lawrence Berkeley Lab to do research on alternative energy. And part of that money went to the Helios Project, which I am very familiar with as a former environmental commissioner in the city of Berkeley. I went to the meetings. And so Stephen Chu was there only 4 years, and then as soon as Obama became president, he appointed Stephen Chu to be Secretary of Energy. It's a very important position, and the Department of Energy manages the nuclear weapons labs, or funds them, I should say. And Stephen Chu, while he was director at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, said that one of the British Petroleum, one of the BP scientists who had been at Caltech, was his twin brother, and as soon as Stephen Chu became Secretary of Energy, he chose that British Petroleum scientist as the Under Secretary of Energy for the federal government, and those two guys are now managing the disaster in the Gulf region.
So they're pretty much kind of hard to tell the government from the corporation in this.
There isn't any government. The government is corporations now.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and if you go back to the false flag operation of 9/11, which we're all familiar with here, Bush was a very mediocre kind of spokesperson for that false flag operation because he couldn't dissimulate very well. Remember his reading that children's story in the schoolroom, in the elementary school, while the attacks were taking place, quote end attacks, quote end of quote. Contrast that with Obama, who is a very practiced dissimulator.
Very practiced. Very smart. He's a very smart man, too.
And so he knows what the score is. I mean, if you look at BP stopped using the name British Petroleum. It's actually a banking company. Its majority shareholder is J.P. Morgan Chase.
And it's actually, the book.
Wait. Let me make this point because it's an important point. It's actually a banking company that is engaged in oil exploration. And so it's continually engaged in irrational, from the oil exploration point of view, safety measures. And that's why the safety record of the other oil companies are at 1 and 2 violations, and BP is at 760 violations because it's a banking company. And on this particular rig, it saved $500,000 by not installing the blowout preventer. And those decisions are made by bankers. And so this is an extension now of the same mechanism that the bailout, in other words, the same companies, the same banks that were bailed out, just look at BP not as an oil company, but as a bank, because that's what it is. And it's very important to understand that. It's a very different company from the other oil companies.
Good point, Alfred.
Right. So let me finish it. And so that's why this company is carrying out those false flag operations, because it's a direct extension of the banks. And it's how the banksters, and that's why you have a common chairman between Goldman Sachs. Is the chairman of the Goldman Sachs is the chairman of BP, is the international chairman of BP, is a common person who's also the chairman, who is also the chief financial advisor to the Vatican. And functionally that all works because BP is an instrument of carrying out environmental warfare. It's not like the other oil companies. And that's very important to understand and to analyze, that it is a creature of the banks, and it is really a bank. It's not an oil company.
And it's also self-insured. They are their own. They have their own insurance company.
Interesting. Well, it just kind of gets deeper and deeper into the web. Now, Loren, you were, did you have some closing comments? I guess you have another engagement you have to go to from here. So, if you've got some, you know, wanted to tie together any important points before you need to leave, or if you can stay, that's you're welcome too. So, whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have to leave, but I just wanted to say that doing interviews with Alfred is very interesting because we come from two different experiential bases and different funds of knowledge, and he's a great analytical and critical thinker. So I want to thank you, Alfred, for some of your excellent insights and your efforts to bring more facts to the table. And I think that interviews that we do where the issue gets thrown back and forth and people get to say, you know, to add to the commentary are really important, because the audience listening also has an opportunity to think about things and it stimulates creative thinking. I think that's what I want to say. So I want to thank both of you, and I hope that we'll do more interviews on these very, very timely, very critical, and very big issues. Warfare is not bullets and a gun anymore. It's continents and tectonic plates and environmental disasters that can affect the whole world. So it's extremely important for people to become more aware and to begin to do their own investigation. So thank you both.
Okay, and thank you. And I hope I'm able to drop you okay. I guess I hope it hangs up when you do, so that then we have a smooth transition here. We'll see here.
I think if I just hang up, then you have Alfred on your conference call, and there won't be a problem.
Okay, well, thank you, Lorraine.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And I've got to say, this is KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And we're streamed on the internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs, they're available at www.givemesometruth.info. And Alfred, would you like to give your website?
Sure. Well, tonight we're talking about the subject of environmental war. So I would like to direct people to www.peaceinspace.org. We have a program there that Lorraine Murray and myself, who was just with us, broadcast toward the end of May, which sent out the evidence for the BP oil spill actually being an intentional act of disaster capitalism. My other website is exopolitics.com, and you can go there for articles. The most recent article that we published at examiner.com, which you can go, or at exopolitics.com, is entitled Evidence: BP Oil Spill is Disaster Capitalism by a Criminal Elite for the Purposes of Depopulation. So,
Alfred, I would like to bring this up, that there is documentation to back up what you're talking about, and it goes, and some of it goes a number of years back. And so even though it may, to those that may be unfamiliar with what, why we would be making these assumptions, there is plenty of information to at least cast the questions of the timely or the events, you know, happening one after another and where they may lead. And Alfred, you're familiar, of course, with the report from Iron Mountain.
Right. Well, without going into an historical analysis of a depopulation, what I'd like to do is just refer people to peaceinspace.org, and there we have done an extensive analysis of environmental warfare, which includes depleted uranium radiation poisoning of the environment and of the globe through the Iran and Iraq wars, and through nuclear testing, which is now having a depopulation effect on the human genome. And these are part of an intentional depopulation program. By going to my most recent Examiner article, you can see there the video of a lecture that I gave on that subject. So that by the time we get to the BP oil spill, which is an act of environmental war, what I'd like to do is to share with you some of the estimates that I've been seeing as of today, watching the NOAA projections on video of how the oil spill is projected to go into the Atlantic over time. And one of the projections that I saw on video, and this is based on NOAA projections, is that by a certain amount of time, and this is not an extraordinarily lengthy amount of time, the oil would have gone all the way up the East Coast and out into the Atlantic. And by estimates, it would have destroyed, according to this source on the video, one-fifth of the food chain on the planet. And the estimate was that if you know, this would cause a famine, either a regional or a worldwide famine. Now, if this is an act of environmental war, then famine is an intentional part of this depopulation. And that sort of famine is what intentionally happened during the Great Depression, both in Europe and in the United States, which was again manufactured by the banking interests, by the City of London, which are the same entities that, assuming that this is environmental warfare, which there are good reasons to believe, manufactured this crisis, seeing as how BP itself is really a banking entity and not an oil company.
Okay, now you,
per se.
And as you say, a banking entity, we've already had the banking entities doing an economic warfare.
Right.
So, I mean, when you start connecting the dots, there's starting to be a number of things that are starting to add up here. And, you know, just because the idea that we don't call it, I mean, you know, in mainstream media, war on the middle class, but you ship all the jobs out of a country, you start to, you know, you take over or devalue their dollars or just print so much and then put everybody into debt. I mean, there's so many different aspects to this that we start to really need to start paying attention to these things, and they're major.
Right.
So go ahead.
Yes. Right. So this is a latest step in the City of London's war. And the reason why we say City of London is that there's a very well documented history here that goes back at least several hundred years, and that's highly documented of we like to call it God, gold, oil, and drugs. And if you trace the ultimate beneficial ownership of gold, the ultimate beneficial ownership of petroleum, and the ultimate beneficial ownership of the drugs and the narcotics trade, going back to the Opium Wars in China, it centers in a Masonic network revolving around the British throne and involving the City of London and certain leading families like the Rothschild family.
Okay, and let me just state that, you know, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and are my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Cahen staff, volunteers, or board of directors. Okay.
Yeah. Rightly so, because these are very sensitive matters, and as an international judge myself, I understand how important it is to spell out those sort of disclaimers, but there is, for example, a very lengthy research volume that we have linked to in a number of our articles called Dope Inc. that goes to the D part of God, the drugs part of God, that establishes the identity of this Masonic network going back to the time of George III, King George III, who was actively engaged in the drug wars against China and wanted to use the same sort of a drug war against the young American Revolution, against the American colonies, the opium war that they had successfully used against China at that time and chose not to. And that was the only reason why at that time the United States was spared. Well, if you fast forward, at the time of the Vietnam War, when the Vietnam War was launched, which I'm of the Vietnam War generation, and there was no strategic reason for that war except a number of lateral ones, to one of which was to create a narcotics dependent underclass within the entire United States, and which is now part of what has disassembled the U.S. over the last 40 years. So we're seeing a whole number of policies being carried out, and it's not as though the BP oil spill disaster is the product of carelessness. No, it's masquerading as carelessness. This, in fact, is an environmental war attack using elements of the environment, the sea, the oceans, hurricanes now. If hurricanes occur, they can be, and as was tested out in Katrina, they can be accelerated and steered so that the maximum amount of toxins and benzene and other carcinogenic and fatal toxic gases can be dropped over the South U.S. and the Southeastern U.S. And, you know, this is not fear-mongering, but this is repeating actual research, which is occurring, which is backed up by people who are having conversations with BP insiders, with law enforcement insiders, and now we're in that phase of the operation, which could be called the very beginning of it, kind of doing a shuffle to allow the next phase of the catastrophe, which is the real damage from the oil, to be done while BP gets two relief wells to be able to get most of the other oil out, i.e. they thought how to carry out an environmental war attack and at the same time make a profit out of it.
So, again, these guys they kind of follow the same blueprints when they do things over and over again, and these have a strong historical significance, is what you're saying.
Yeah. For example, if we go to the last significant environmental war attack that we had occurred in this region, and that was the Haiti earthquake of January 2010. And right before that occurred, all of us in the research community, as you may recall, we're here in Vancouver, Canada, and in February, just about 10 days after the earthquake, the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics were about to start. And there was a whole buzz that went emails throughout the community said, well, we're waiting for the false flag operation to come. When is the false flag operation around the 2010 Winter Olympics coming? And as soon as the 2010 Haiti seismic attack happened on Haiti, January 2010 seismic attack happened on Haiti, I knew instantly that was the 2010 Olympics false flag attack. In fact, a similar pattern was happened with the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, China, when on May 12th, 2008, the China earthquake happened, again with the signature of a seismic attack rather than a real earthquake in which 80,000 people died. This was a destabilization of the Summer Olympics, which are about to commence, just a short time after that attack. And these are attacks at multiple levels. At one level, it's to prevent kind of the world spirit or the world psyche from uniting around the Olympic spirit by creating a tremendous catastrophe. It's to punish the kind of the host country Olympic and positive about the whole thing. And so the reason that Haiti was done was multiple. First of all, the head of state of Canada is actually a Haitian woman. And so this was like a symbolic attack upon Canada when Haiti was attacked with an earthquake, and the head of state of Canada sort of broke down in public and, was very moved by it. But enormous gold and petroleum deposits had been found underneath Haiti, and the Haitian government itself did not want to proceed with their exploitation by foreign interests. And so the attack upon Haiti, which was pinpointed and centered as a seismic attack upon its government, upon the executive palace, all the fancy hotels, everything in the center of Haiti, for no apparent reason other than they had the power to do that, in which 200,000 people died as opposed to 140,000 at Hiroshima. So it was a weapon of mass destruction. That was to destroy the government and infrastructure and any power of national identity in Haiti. And if people go to peaceandspace.org, you will see at least a couple of radio programs and articles there that demonstrate, among other things, contracts and board meetings that occurred the day after the Haiti earthquake that were all in preparation right before, that transferred properties and began projects in Haiti relating to these mineral properties that were done between and two companies that were that are controlled by Rothschild interests.
Well, isn't it true that often that these events also lead to some major legislation, and although the legislation may appear to be after the fact, often this legislation is made prior to these events, and like there's some major meeting going on right now with the oceans and among various world leaders. Are you aware of that?
You mean the G20 up in
This
Toronto, or
no? This is actually has to do with, and I don't have the name of the meeting, but I'm from my understanding there's a world meeting dealing with the control of the oceans.
Let me just Google that and see what comes up. I wouldn't do it. Yeah, this is the SOCAT, the Southern Ocean Regional Meeting. Is that one, or
World
Oceans?
I can't really name that.
That was February 2010.
No, this is one I believe that's going on right now. But again, I can't bring up the internet for some reason on my computer right now, so I can't really look it up. But I've heard it spoken of by numerous people lately. But we also know that they have.
Yeah. There's the Ocean Sciences Meeting in June 22-25 in Taipei. Is that the one you mean, or the International Conference on Ocean, Offshore, and Arctic Engineering in Shanghai, China, from June 6 to 11?
Well, that
Sustainable Ocean Summit?
That sounds like it.
Okay, so let's open up that one and see what that one's about. The Sustainable Ocean Summit, Belfast, 15 to 17 June. Let's just see what this is about. The World Ocean Council. I think that this is a private one. Yeah, these are kind of good people because they're
okay.
Let's see who are the members of the founding members constitute a steering committee.
I can't really see. Okay, well, maybe we can just kind of go on from there until we get a little more backup information on that. But I've heard this from a number of sources. It has more to do on the control of the oceans and may tie into the Law of the Sea Treaty.
Here we go. United Nations Division of Ocean Affairs and Law of the Sea. United Nations General Report of Law of the Sea. So there's a whole Law of the Sea thing happening at the same time. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there is.
Okay, and that would be to control the oceans and to have a catastrophic event to where they have to, people have to give up their sovereignty of their seas to attribute to the sustainability of the oceans would tie right into a Hegelian dialectic. So.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And this is happening at many, many levels.
Mm-hmm.
When one goes into an environmental war, there's also, and I think on this program, it has been covered, sort of the black magic, or the dark side in the design of these things. And we have the fact that this environmental war attack was designed to occur on April 20th, which is Adolf Hitler's birthday. And this is not just, you know, some subjective observation of mine. That's when the Columbine attack occurred, which has been shown to be an attack that was not, that was controlled from the outside by mind controllers. You know, objective observers have stated that this shows that the timing on Adolf Hitler's birthday, I think it's his 121st birthday, shows that, there is a purpose. They're kind of signaling some quasi-political purpose.
Well, my understanding that there's power in numbers, and that they like to. Often, you will find a numerology built within it, or other symbolisms, and sometimes they sign their work, and so often you will find many different ways that they can embed symbology into an event if it's one that has been created. I mean, of course, there's natural events, but when you start reading some of the works of some of these, and that's again why I kind of pointed to the report from Iron Mountain, although I know there's a lot more out there to back up this, but they were using the report from Iron Mountain as an environmental, using the environment. But you can even go back to the turn of the 1900s where they speak of utilizing the environment as the way to bring around a one-world government.
Exactly. One of the themes that Lorraine Murray and I were talking about prior to the program, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it during our segment, is the issue of the evacuation and martial law and the relationship between the two. And I sort of like to read from this communique.
Go ahead.
It says, this is another slant on why an evacuation of 40 million persons along the Gulf is probably going to happen soon. This is the person who has reported on the gas bubble that's 10 to 15 miles wide. As I told you yesterday, the Gulf Military Command is giving multiple messages of the extremely long length on the inoperability of the trunking command system, perhaps selectively to contain the whole truth within departments. I also got from a source that the Coast Department is now in the process of calling up any former Coast Guard officers and seamen, offering enticements to come back into service quickly. Also, actual measurements at Venice, Louisiana, and Noiberry, Louisiana, are showing health endangering levels of toxic hydrogen sulfides and benzene gases. This evacuation may have to come soon, or millions will most likely die. Then again, and I just want to read this, when the martial law necessary for this evacuation begins, it is likely to begin the Civil War II, the second Civil War in America, and will collapse the banking system and likely much of the federal, state, and local governmental structures. Ordo ab chao. Well, chaos is perhaps coming at 400 to 600 miles per hour. And this is the sentence that I wanted to mention. The Luciferians will be getting their blood sacrifice. And that is that if we trace back this is an environmental war attack by Illuminati forces who have been carrying out a systematic program that's been very much in acceleration, say, since the assassination of John F. Kennedy on November 22nd, 1963, through the Vietnam War, which essentially was really about taking apart the U.S. and taking away its gold and placing its youth and its creating an underclass that was addicted to drugs and just destroying its kind of social fabric. Excuse me. And then, you know, creating drugs is the largest economic component of the U.S. economy. That all came out of the Vietnam War. And that was very much designed by the Dope Inc. Component of this international network.
When you speak of Dope Inc., isn't that a book?
Yeah. Yeah, and so I'm saying, rather than saying this long phrase of this international, I call them the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, and I say that as a lawyer and a judge. I call them a racketeering organization because you could use RICO laws to prosecute them for running rackets, you know, rackets in war, rackets in environmental war attacks, rackets in financial war attacks, all of these things could be properly prosecuted.
Well, I was just going to say is that along that line is all the time we're hearing fingers pointed at different companies or countries and different companies and different races or different religions or different, you name it. But what you're stating right now is the real meat of the idea that it's they're criminals and
yeah.
It doesn't matter what their background or whatever is if it's criminal and until we start realizing it doesn't matter where they come from, we need to start holding those people accountable.
Right. Exactly. And they can be held accountable through a legal mechanism of the racketeering laws, which would pierce the corporate veil and get at the beneficial owners, which are the throne of England and the kind of black nobility of the UK and of Europe and these kind of secret societies, the Rothschild family, all of these very dark entities that for centuries have kept this planet in war, disease, crime, and poverty as their main profit modalities.
And a lot of these elites that have a long history of supposedly being of blood lineage or stature actually started through criminal behavior.
And there's a lot of lore regarding the blood lineage. But going back to that, if this BP oil operation, if they succeed in it, which right now they're using the mainstream media to mesmerize the world, and Obama and BP are playing the mesmer shuffle, and BP is part, and Obama's part of the mesmer shuffle. They're kind of mesmerizing it, extemporizing it, giving it enough time to build up into a major catastrophe without taking action. And that's the role that he's been designated to play. And he's doing it with a great deal of, the guy knows how to dissimulate. There's a lot of, evidence out there that he is a lifelong intelligence asset. So when they say, quote, the Luciferians will be getting their blood sacrificed, it is highly if in fact we're dealing with an intentional disaster capitalism here with an environmental warfare component, they've actually structured out what the blood fallout of this is going to be, and Hurricane Katrina was probably a training exercise.
So obviously, if this is a warfare situation, then there has to be some kind of a goal in the end. So what do you suppose that is?
Right. That's a key question. And that's a question which is not entirely apparent in every paradigm. If you take the conventional paradigm, and that is that, let's look at this as an act of intentional warfare by banking in other kind of royal lineage interests. I mean, after all, the throne of England is the largest landowner of the planet. I think the Queen owns 26% of the land on the planet. Then their purpose now is to call the herd, to bring it down from to avoid it going to 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 billion, and bring it down by 2/3, or even bring it down to what the Georgia Guidestones say, which is 500,000. So if you get their model of reality, is this planet as an elite theme park? You know, think of a theme park with the beautiful people, and everybody else is kind of just there to serve them, but just barely, and it's just sort of an elite theme park. And that's kind of the model that they're attempting to carry out, where royalty is once again respected overtly, class is respected overtly. But then you can say, but look, the BP oil spill is going to poison the oceans. The depleted uranium is filling all of the atmosphere with ionizing radiation, and it's altering and transforming all of the DNA to where all living things are being affected detrimentally. I mean, human DNA, animal DNA, plant DNA are coming up with all these abnormalities now that can be traced to the use of radiation. So what kind of an elite theme park are you having? So then you can come back and say, well, it's just that these people are so enmeshed in power that they don't realize the banksters and these kind of black nobility and the Rothschilds don't realize that they're creating an uninhabitable planet.
Well, you know, something that I've run across, and because, I mean, this part which you're speaking of right now, making the planet uninhabitable, you know, seems to just kind of, you know, go beyond any kind of reason, unless they have developed a way to clean up those kind of oil spills, unless they've developed a way to reverse the depleted uranium and the radioactivity in such a way that it can become inhabitable again. And I'm not an expert on this, but I've been, you know, kicking around looking for things that would make sense along that line, and I'm starting to come up with that there may be such things.
Yeah, there are technologies that I've seen that could reverse these effects or have that potential. And of course, if you take the pandemic example, where one of the depopulation programs was through a pandemic, the H1N1. Of course, that failed, and then they said, well, there would be a vaccine which would be released only to the elite. And that's certainly one way. And in fact, there was a vaccine that was released only to the elite. Fortunately, the H1N1, vaccine genocide attempt failed. And so we have before us now is the BP oil, ecocide and genocide attempt going to fail, or is it going to be successful? We're kind of at the beginning stages of it, and nobody in any position of authority has gotten up and said, wait a minute, this is an intentional environmental warfare attack, because all the organs of government are compromised, and because BP, the major corporate front for the banksters behind the operation, control all major actors, from Obama, his Department of Energy, Dr. Chu, on down. And
doesn't Obama have a designation with the UN?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Meaning that doesn't he have a seat at the UN of some significance, and I can't remember what it is, and it, like, you know, Secretary General or something. You know, I'm not an expert on it. I'm just here. I have heard that mentioned, and I'm not sure if it was Alex Jones.
Well, to give you an illustration of what the UN is, one of the earlier disaster capitalism environmental war attacks that we examined, which you can go to peaceandspace.org to look at all the details and the evidence for, is the May 3rd Myanmar cyclone. May 3rd, 2008, Myanmar cyclone, in which 150,000 people were killed. That was done with a weapon of mass destruction. It was weather warfare. It was done over the May 3rd, 2008 weekend. And on that Friday, both Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada, and the President, then President of the U.S., announced that they were giving the Congressional Medal of Honor or some the Congressional Medal of Merit or something. And Canada announced that they were giving honorary Canadian citizenship to, and this is only at that time, only the second or third person after the Dalai Lama that had been given honorary Canadian citizenship to, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, but the activist in Myanmar, Suu Kyi.
Okay.
Yeah, and the next day, Saturday, May, so that was kind of a coordinated announcement, right? And then on Saturday, May 3rd, the Myanmar cyclone occurred, killing 150,000 people. And then on Monday, the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had an appointment at 3 p.m. for 2 hours. Guess who that appointment was with?
Was it Mr. Obama?
Dr. Henry Kissinger.
Oh, Mr. Kissinger, okay.
Who's Rockefeller's right-hand man, kind of the right-hand, the consigliere of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization. So the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, with its two front men, the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, the President of the United States, George W. Bush, awards the Myanmar activists, Suu Kyi, honorary citizenship and a congressional medal on Friday. They hit it with a weapon of mass destruction on Saturday. On Monday, the consigliere, Dr. Kissinger, waltzes in for a two-hour private appointment with the Secretary General of the UN to brief him that that was an environmental warfare attack and to instruct him to take a trip around Asia, Southeast Asia, and beat everybody over the back with a wet noodle and tell them, you know, to bring the disaster relief on and to coach him on how to assimilate. So that's how the criminal gang works.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the council, the UN thing, might have had to do with the head of the Security Council, but again,
Obama's current job is president of the United States, but his current job is shuffler in chief of the PSYOPs deception operation known as the BP Gulf oil spill environmental war attack.
Okay, well.
I mean, no, I.
No, no I understand. I'm, it's just, yeah, and, you know, and don't, I mean, don't take
this,
ours.
This is not, no. This is, I'm positing this as a way to look at reality on the basis of evidence that we've attempted to put forward. I mean, look. Right now, the chief elections officer, the chief elections clerk of Hawaii has gone on record on video stating that Obama's birth certificate is not in Hawaii and that he was not born in Hawaii. This is a state employee. And he's the chief clerk of the Hawaiian's elections. The Hawaiian birth certificate registry. Okay? So, I mean, you've got lawlessness is abroad in the United States. I'm an international lawyer and a judge. I'm just calling it as I see it. In the Bible, there's a guy called the lawless one. Well, take a look around.
Right. No, and again, this is something that people shouldn't take what we say, you know, at face value. They should do their own research.
These are operating hypotheses about reality that we're putting forward on the basis of evidence. And when one gets into analysis of false flag operations, we know that during 9/11, the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, Richard B. Cheney, who was a year ahead of me at Yale and flunked out, and Richard and George W. Bush, who was 2 years behind me at Yale and just, you know, barely stayed in because he was, you know, caught hazing freshman pledges at the fraternity with branding them with hot hanging irons, even then he exhibited a sociopathic personality and, but for the power of his father, would have been kicked out. So I've been tracking this kind of psychopathic personality and power for a long time. And, we had the vice president, the president, and the Secretary of Defense of the United States, at least, dissimulate to the hilt for 8 years while in office after that event. And now we have the President of the United States dissimulating. Well, you know, he's dissimulating that he was born in Hawaii. And there's enough of a mafia that, you know, they can't get it to the Supreme Court.
Would you give the definition of dissimulation?
Well, this was first taught to me when I was a futurist at Stanford Research Institute in 1977. And I had just started a project that spring with the Jimmy Carter White House, a contract research project on extraterrestrial life. And I'd gotten the approval of the White House, of the Jimmy Carter White House at the staff level, along with some other eminent scientists, to start a Carter White House study on extraterrestrial communication. And that was in the spring of 77. In October of 77, as the project was getting underway, I was called into a meeting at SRI in Palo Alto, California, with a vice president of Stanford Research Institute and a number of other futurists and supervisors. And the liaison between the Pentagon and Stanford Research Institute, Department of Defense and Stanford Research Institute. And before they came in, the vice president turned to me and said, "Mr. Weber, dissimulate," meaning the Pentagon liaison was coming into the office to try to shut down my project. They were urging me to just yes him and pretend that I was going along. Okay? Dissimulating is calling pretending. And it's what actors do. It's also what spies do. And you pretend to do a role. You pretend to lead the nation in stopping the oil spill and marshaling the resources. You pretend to go after the parties that attacked the World Trade Center and brought it down and attacked the Pentagon and brought it down. You pretend to do that. And the way you pretend to do that is you act in a certain way that you believe will trigger, programs in people, or disinformational programs in people, so that they're viewing a certain fantasy that you're acting out. And that's what modern government has become.
Well, Ultimate, wouldn't you say that, okay, if you were going to have World War III, I mean, is it not unusual that before they do an outright physical battle, don't they do an information war?
Okay, let me just say this. We're in World War III, and the United States was just bombed using environmental weapons. Environmental war was prohibited by international treaty, the Environmental Weapons Treaty of 1977, which Jimmy Carter signed, and a whole number of countries have signed. We have been in World War III for quite a while. There have been attacks relating to World War III going on using advanced weapons known as HARP. And the United States has just been attacked with a major weapon of war. Not in the way that Obama said it when he said today, we have just been attacked and it was like 9/11. No, the United States had just been attacked with an environmental weapon intentionally to destroy it and to destroy the sustenance of peoples around the world for the purpose of killing them off and killing off the biosphere. And it would take a whole other program to go into what the subsequent agenda is.
Yeah, but also, if you control the press and you control the information, and the information out there is plenty or confusing, that's a major part of warfare in its own right, correct?
Yeah, i.e. controlling the mainstream press is part of the dissimulation, is part of the matrix. One creates an artificial matrix so that it appears that one is taking effective action when this is not, when It's not effective action. In fact, the action that one is taking is just the opposite. The impact of the actions that one is taking is just the opposite. In other words, the impact of Obama's prevaricating and delaying is in fact making everything worse, not improving everything, and it's intentional.
But it didn't start with him. It seems like each presidential leader has taken a different, you know, a somewhat different role, but still played a part in how this all evolved.
Yeah, because they all take the Bilderberger Oath, and you don't get to be president unless you've taken that Bilderberger Oath and you're sworn to those principles.
And do you know what that oath entails?
It entails world domination. It entails elite domination. It entails depopulation. It entails whatever that whatever that advanced satanic reptilian world demands.
So I guess we're coming to the point where we might want to sum up, the gist of our evening. And again, yeah, there's a whole lot of other aspects that we can cover and arenas. I know we didn't get into a little bit of the, even though I brought it up, but we didn't get into the aspect on the report from Iron Mountain. And I kind of understand why in a sense, but it's not a, I think when you're talking about dissimulation, there may be some of that involved with that particular report. And,
right.
Yeah. And so that it may not be something that there could be reality in things taking place outside of this earth, but at the same time, you know, if you wanted to distract and create something that made it appear like that, and it wasn't, you could do the same. But again, that's a whole nother aspect that I hope maybe we can kind of address at some point in the future.
Sure, sure. Well, just to sum this up in a sentence, is that right now it appears that we're coming to a convergence of false flag operations, which are part of an intentional depopulation and ecocidal plan. And by the evidence so far, the BP Gulf of Mexico oil spill appears to be yet another operation by what I call an international war crimes racketeering organization to depopulate the planet and bring about a dystopian future and make money on it at the same time.
Well, again, I want to thank you, Alfred, for discussing some aspects, particularly aspects I'm not seeing. I mean, I hear beating around the bush on certain issues, but when it really comes down to it, there's a lot more to be looking at here as far as, we're waiting for the right shoe to fall when maybe the shoes are falling all around us and, looking for the right one when we, it's kind of apparent that something's going on here and that we need to start asking questions. And that we may be in a form of warfare, and to think that we're off fighting it elsewhere when really the front is here.
Exactly.
Right. And I want to thank you again, and Loren, and I hope we can do this again sometime. And I want to say good night.
Thank you so much for having us as your guests.
Okay. Good night, Alfred.
Night.